ridiculous plans, Max was a total free spirit. When we were each down to bare feet, which wasn't a particularly comfortable way to pedal a vehicle, I gave him a countdown. 3, 2, 1, go!
Max. What do you think that was?
I glanced over at Sophie and shook my head, torn between wanting to laugh and also wondering how much one of these stupid boats could cost. They appeared to be old models, like they'd floated around this little man-made lake for decades, but that didn't mean they were cheap to replace. If I had to guess, I'd say we snapped a drive belt or something. And it was totally her fault. We'd been pedaling our asses off, pedaling ridiculously hard to the point that I was probably going to fall on my face when I stepped onto the dock with jelly legs, when Sophie jerked the steering handle. In our chaotic rush to out-pedal each other, we'd completely ignored the boat's steering capabilities. But as soon as she moved it, and we realized we could mess with direction while hyper-pedaling, all bets were off. Honestly, my abs were nearly as sore as my legs, because we'd been cracking up the entire time we raced. Technically, it wasn't racing, since we were driving the same vessel, but also it was totally a race, because it was. Until something snapped. And now, we were sitting still with inoperable pedals. "What are you doing?" I asked as she lifted her phone to her ear. "I'm calling the park, so the kid who loaded us into this pink boat can find a way to come retrieve us." "His name is Dewey," I corrected. "And I was just going to holler across the lake. Your way seems more efficient, though."
"That's because it is," she muttered, obviously listening to something because her eyebrows were up and her eyes were narrowed. She was so pretty that it kind of took my breath away. And I was glad I was wearing sunglasses so she couldn't see how much time I spent looking at her. Because her pretty had layers. Her red lips, brown eyes, long lashes, she was gorgeous. But her beauty was amplified by how smart she was and how fucking funny she could be. She was fascinating to be around, as in, all I wanted to do was listen to her and learn all the weirdly wonderful ways her mind worked. God, I was in deep. "Nope." She shook her head and lowered the phone. "That was a recording telling me the office is closed and the marina doesn't have a separate phone number. So, start hollering, Parks."
"I will, after you say you're sorry for mocking my holler method."
"I didn't mock. I was just agreeing with you on my method's efficiency."
"Dewey!" I cupped my hands around my mouth and yelled, "Our boat is broken! Dewey! Our pedals don't work!"
"Love how hard you went on the E's," Sophie said around a giggle.
"Dewey!" I yelled again, just to make her laugh harder. God, she had a great laugh.
But Dewey's eyes didn't even raise from the phone in his hand. Fucking wonderful.
"Well," she said brightly, "he has to notice us eventually, right?"
"I suppose."
I leaned back against the seat, not hating the idea of just floating around the lake with her.
"So, now I guess we just wait for a bit."
"At least it's a nice evening," Sophie said, amusement in her voice. "Not too hot, not dark yet. The view is..." "What is that?"
I followed her finger to the right side of the lake.
"Is that?
Oh, dear God, that hawk is really going to town on what's left of whatever that poor creature was," Sophie said disgustedly. There was an enormous red-tailed hawk pulling innards out of its prey right at the edge of the field.
"Well, this view is certainly memorable as fuck."
Sophie snorted, holding a hand in front of her face so she couldn't see the carnage. Giggling, she said, "Can you dip one of your shoes in the water and use it to turn us so we're looking at anything other than this horrifyingly gory Wild Kingdom dinner buffet?"
"Why not one of your shoes?" I asked, looking out at the green algae all over the surface of this side of the lake.
"Because," she said, reaching down to protectively slide her black high heels farther underneath her.
And don't you want to be chivalrous?
But these are my date shoes.
She snorted again. Do you seriously consider them your date shoes?
Kind of, I admitted, giving into a grin as she smiled at me like she found me absurdly childish. I live in my Nikes when I'm not at work, so these leather bad boys are pretty much only worn to family brunches and hot dates.
That is adorable, she said, tilting her head and pursing her lips. Like a little kid with his church shoes, terrified to get a scuff.
I wore them for you, Soph, so you should be honored.
Her face was so close, so pretty, that I couldn't stop myself from reaching out a hand to tug on a wavy blonde curl.
Oh, is this a hot date? She teased, her eyes sliding over my face in a way that made me lean in a little closer.
The entrails threw me off, but every player has his game, I guess.
Admit it, Steinbeck, I said, lowering my mouth toward hers. It's totally working.
She swayed toward me, running her tongue across her bottom lip like she was thinking the same thing I was as her eyes dipped to my mouth. Parks, do you?
The hawk chose that moment to screech, which made Soph gasp and turn her face away from me and toward the hawk, who was still picking apart his supper.
She sounded entirely unaffected when she said, That bird is never going to stop, is he? I watched the attention-stealing asshole as he really started getting after his carcass desecration, and I let out an impressed whistle. I mean, it is dinner time.
That's it, she said, giving me a weird look before excitedly pulling her key ring out of her pocket.
This thing doesn't have an ignition, dipshit. I see your usage of the word dipshit and raise you one, King Dipshit, she said, before raising her keys to her face and blowing into a whistle that was hanging on the key ring. And it wasn't just a whistle. It was the loudest, most high-pitched, most brain-scramblingly loud whistle I'd ever heard in my entire life. Immediately, Dewey's head came up. And within seconds, he made eye contact with my waving arms and Sophie's shrieking whistle.
Our pedals are broken, Dewey. We can't move.
Not at all, he yelled back. Can you use the emergency oars under the seat and back?
Emergency oars? Soph leaned over into the back and lifted the seat. Holy shit, there are two oars in here. I watched as she started extending one of the telescopic oars.
Thanks, Dewey, I yelled. Welcome,
the kid yelled back.
You know, Maxie, Soph said quietly, handing me the second oar. It's going to be even easier when we're rowing to see which side of the boat is moving faster.
That's true, I agreed, taking the proffered oar.
So we're racing then? She asked, doing a stretch with her arms and oar over her head.
Of course we are, I replied, extending my paddle. But don't be sad when you lose, honey.
Shut up, she said, pinching my bicep. And get ready, honey.
Chapter 37 Soph.
Good morning, Soph. I heard from the office to my left.
Good morning, Ben, I replied on autopilot, not even looking in that direction as I mentally prepared myself for my 8 o'clock meeting. After tossing and turning last night, I got up and decided to catch up on some emails. Yes, it was a Sunday night, but I had nothing else going on, so why not, right? I'd nearly had a heart attack when I saw that Edie had scheduled a subjectless meeting on my calendar for 8 a.m. with Richard Casey, EVP of Administration. Could it be? Was I about to have the conversation that would launch my career into a new direction? I doubted that was it exactly, but there was the possibility that it was a pre-conversation.
Morning, Soph,
from my right, to which I responded,
Morning, Dallas.
Morning, Soph,
from the cubicle in the corner.
Morning, Betsy.
I said, replaying in my head all of the strategic goals I'd set and met over the past 2 years that I needed to illuminate in my interview, wrote and launched new organizational development module.
Good morning, Sophie, Isabel said.
Good morning, Iz, I replied, rummaging through my tote.
Good morning, Sophie, Stuart said.
Good morning, Stuart, I muttered, reminding myself to focus on the necessary steps we'd taken to implement that plan.
Good morning, Sophie,
I heard from the corner office. Good morning, Amy, I replied, breathing in through my nose and trying to focus on staying calm so my anxiety didn't send all of my thoughts exploding into a nonsensical burst of nerves. Edie wasn't in her office when I reached my cubicle, but I'd come in early, so she was probably still downstairs getting coffee. I fired up my computer, but as I read through the printed memo that had been left on my desk, I heard the Slack notification. Someone in the office was IMing me. I narrowed my eyes and saw Stuart's name. What in the actual? Stuart.
Are you okay?
I looked around my empty department and wondered if this were a joke. Why would Stuart be messaging me? I didn't get it. Maybe he was trying to hijack my promotion. I typed, fine. Why? Stuart.
Because you didn't insult me?
I typed, what? Stuart.
You've insulted me via good mornings every day since we broke up. You looked distracted today and called me by my name, so are you feeling okay?
I looked out the window at the bright morning sun and thought about what he'd said. I'd forgotten to call him a name. Since the day we'd both returned to work after the wedding, I'd made it my mission to come up with new and interesting insults to call him upon my daily arrival. At first, it had taken some Google searching, but then laziness had settled to where I used low-hanging fruit like assbag and doucheball on the regular. Either way, I'd never missed the opportunity to make him feel like a cockroach every time I saw him. But today I'd forgotten. This felt like a breakthrough. I closed out of Slack, done engaging with Stuart, and texted Max instead. Me. I think I just had a breakthrough. Another thing that had been born from my insomnia, relief that we'd cut out the sexual activities. Even though I would miss it and absolutely thought we could continue hooking up without issues, it was comforting, being on solid footing. Without the physical intimacy, I wouldn't have to overthink things like texting Max every time I had news. We were friends, and everything was fine. Max.
Details, please.
Me.
I forgot to insult Stuart when I saw him today.
Max.
Holy shit, proud of you. You're on your way.
Me.
To
Max.
To almost never thinking about him.
I smiled even though there was no one to see it, because Max was sentimental. He remembered conversational details and things that mattered to other people. Things that mattered to me. I texted,
how's your morning going so far?
Max.
My dad bought the boat.
I made a little squealing sound and texted, so this is working?
Max. Apparently so. We might have to go ham on the pics later.
I grinned as I texted.
I don't think people say ham anymore.
Max.
What are you, the fucking language police? We should get drinks tonight.
Me. Where and why? Max.
Upstream patio, to celebrate your forgetting stew milestone and my dad's pontoon.
Me.
Six?
Max.
See you there.
I glanced up and Edie was walking into the department with Richard beside her. I got major butterflies as they glanced in my direction, and Edie gestured for me to join them, even though it was still only 7:40 a.m. I took a deep breath, grabbed my laptop and notebook, and went into the meeting.
Chapter 38. Max.
Wait. What about this?
Sophie took a ridiculous selfie with her lips puckered around a cigar, a puff of smoke in front of her face. She held it up for me to see. She looked absolutely stoned and said, you can caption it, my beautiful smoker. Steinbeck. I pried her phone from her hands and deleted the photo, which seemed incredibly bright in the dusky darkness.
Why are you making this so difficult?
She grinned at me.
Because it's fun.
When I arrived at Upstream, Sophie was already seated at a table on the patio. Not only had she ordered our drinks, but she'd ordered beer bread and French fries, and the girl had picked up fucking cigars on her way over, which technically weren't allowed on the patio. However, it was now 9:30 on a Monday night, and we were the only ones left on the patio, so we were free to puff to our heart's content. The cigars had been to celebrate what she called our trifecta of good news. One, the Stewart breakthrough. Two, the Lorna Bodie McBoatface, her name for the pontoon, not mine. Three, the near promotion. She'd texted me all day, out of her mind excited about the fact that her boss was finally retiring and she was going to be interviewed to be the replacement. It was crazy impressive that she could be a VP at a mid-sized company before hitting 30, but not surprising when you knew her. In addition to being a hard worker, she had this hyper-focused, methodical mentality where every decision she made at work was guided by a type of how would I proceed if I owned the business ideology. She was exactly what I would want in a VP if I were running the business, and she deserved the recognition. Of course, the near promotion had her all in on taking some pushing-the-envelope social media photos, and the entire night had been a giant photo shoot, until she'd gotten distracted by the cigars. I lifted my phone and took a black-and-white shot of her smirking at me with one eyebrow raised. Holy shit, this is it. Shut up, she said, finally putting out the cigar in our makeshift beer glass ashtray. Seriously. The picture perfectly captured the way I saw her. She looked professional, smooth, wavy hair, glasses, black dress with blazer, but her expression was sexy and cute and so fucking charming that I knew I'd save it. Look, I held it out and she did a double take. Oh my God, how'd you do that? She asked, leaning her face a little closer to my phone. Chanel number 5 floated over to me in the summer breeze, and I ignored it. Do what? She looked impressed and said, manage to take a picture that feels like the camera and the subject are sharing an intimate moment. I wasn't sure how to answer that, because the photo had managed to see her like a lover's gaze. My gaze. I cleared my throat and said, I'm a talented photographer, I guess. But just before I'd said it, she got a tiny crinkle in between her eyebrows. So what over-the-top caption should I post? I said, intent on erasing that question mark of a moment. How about, she makes it move? She snorted. Gross. Hashtag wind beneath my wings. Negatory, she said, tilting her head. It needs to be vague but deep, like a subtweet. A subtweet? You know what I mean. How about... I sat back in my chair and stared into the evening sky. Sometimes you just know. Sometimes you just know. She repeated it, then added, oh my God, that is perfect. Will totally be taken as a love confession, even though it's saying nothing. Right. I said, because the literal meaning behind it is that sometimes I look at you and just know that you're going to need ice cream soon. That is uncanny, she said, dragging a hand through her wavy hair, because I was just about to ask you to go with me to Ted and Wally's before we call it a night. I knew that you were. Let's go get our ice cream closer. Sounds good. When she stood up, I thought two things. One, fuck, she had stunning legs. Two, she was still wearing her work shoes, which were very tall pumps. Aren't your feet tired? I asked as we walked around the other patio tables and followed the sidewalk around the corner. They've actually lost all feeling, she said cheerfully. Do you want a piggyback ride? My feet were sore, and I was wearing steel-toed boots that did not have high heels. Hers had to be fucking throbbing. So you can take them off? No, thanks. she said, waving a dismissive hand. My building is close by. Please, let me, I insisted, tugging on her sleeve to pull her closer as we got to the ice cream shop. I want to.
No,
she said, grinning up at me. One more beer and I probably would, but I'm far too sober for such shenanigans. Bullshit. Shut up and buy me a malt, she said, grabbing my sleeve and pulling me into Ted and Wally's as she pushed open the door. Fine. I let her drag me forward, trying not to enjoy the feeling of her hands on me. And then I got an idea as she was placing her order. I pulled out my wallet, grabbed my credit card, and handed it to her. What? Please order me a malt, too, and I'll be right back. Her eyebrows furrowed, but she took the card. What are you doing? I'll be right back. Just come outside when you're done.
Chapter 39 Sophie. I stepped outside, glad the summer evening still had a little heat left in it. I glanced around, but didn't see any sign of Max. Wonderful.
Sophie!
I heard him before I saw him ride up, on a rent-a-bike.
What is happening here?
I asked, shaking my head as he pedaled up, looking absolutely ridiculous and kind of adorable.
Get in the basket, Steinbeck.
His eyes were very nearly dancing as he said,
I've seen your ass and I've seen this basket, so I know it's a fit.
I'm not sure how to take that, I said, trying not to laugh, but failing miserably as I looked at the oversized basket. And I'm definitely not going to do that.
Why not? He asked. Afraid you're too clumsy to be able to get in?
No, and stop trying to use reverse psychology against me.
Think about what an amazing photo we can get for our followers of your knight in shining armor rescuing your sore feet.
That would be cute, I said, and looked at the basket again. There was something about Max that always made me want to throw caution to the wind. When I was with him, I almost felt like a different person, like the kind of person who would ride home in a bicycle basket. I'm not sure how to do it in a dress, I said, thinking logistically as I stepped out of my heels, without flashing something, or spilling our malts.
One leg on each side of the wheel, dress tucked into the basket with you.
He grinned and waggled his eyebrows.
Boom.
I gave him an eye roll as I put my phone and keys into my blazer's pockets. Hold the handlebars still while I get in, you jackass.
Your wish is my command.
After a few awkward tries, I successfully mounted the bike with my legs splayed around the front wheel, my shoes and our cups in my lap. I'm fairly certain my backside will remain stuck in this tiny basket forever.
I'll be happy to apply the oil that sets it free then.
Pervert, I teased.
Best friend, he corrected.
Interchangeable titles. I pulled out my phone and held it up, capturing Max grinning behind me on the bicycle. Well, damn, this is adorable. I hate us for being so cute.
Are you ready?
He asked, his deep voice rich with amusement, as I put the phone back in my pocket.
Hold on tight, because I'm pretty sure the handlebars are going to get a little wonky when I first get going.
What do I hold on to? I squealed, laughing, even though I had a very high chance of dying. I looked at him over my shoulder and said, There's nothing for me to hold on to, Max.
Put your hands on top of mine, honey,
he said calmly, his face so mischievous that it was a freaking turn-on, pushing the bike forward with his foot.
And trust me.
He started pedaling, and I couldn't believe it was working. Somehow, I was balanced with my ass in the basket and my legs straddling the front tire, so he didn't have any real problems aside from not being able to see well around me. Person on the left! I called out when we approached a pedestrian, and look out! When a group of women exited the tattoo shop to our right without warning. I couldn't see his face, but the sound of Max's deep voice barking directions and laughing at my squeals had me cackling all the way home. When we finally reached my building, my stomach hurt and my mascara was destroyed. I clumsily climbed out of the basket and grinned at Max, who was standing with his long legs straightened around the bike. I handed him his malt. That was, quite the interesting ride home.
But how do your feet feel?
He asked,
setting the cup in the basket while looking down at my legs in a way that made them feel slightly wobbly.
Wonderful, I said, holding my malt in one hand while holding my pumps in the other.
They're ecstatic to be free of these and eternally grateful for your rescue. I am a hero, aren't I?
Sure you are. I don't know why, but I lingered. For some reason, I didn't feel ready to leave. I looked down at the bike's front tire and casually asked,
Do you want to come up? I'm sure Larry would love to watch a Seinfeld rerun with you.
It was impossible to see his eyes in the darkness, but after a moment he said,
I should probably head home.
Boo, I said, stepping a little closer and running my finger along the rubber-tipped end of the handlebar. I don't want to be done celebrating with you.
Me either, he said, reaching out a hand to grasp a slip of my blazer between his thumb and forefinger and tugging. But nothing good happens after dark.
I think we both know that isn't true, I said, my breath stopped up in my chest from the insinuation in his words. I knew we shouldn't, but I couldn't help it. I was hungry for more dark nights with him.
Nothing smart happens for us. Is that better?
He asked, and I knew by his tone that he absolutely wanted the same thing I did, but was just stronger than me.
No, I replied, but I suppose it's better anyway. It's a work night.
Thanks for the ride, Maxie.
There was a sarcastic grin in his voice when he said, Anytime, honey.
And that endearment, that stupid endearment that I'd always found so damn generic and lame when other people said it, set me on fire. I shivered at the memory of his words in that hotel room. Fuck yes, honey, you feel so fucking good. I watched him ride away on that stupid rent-a-bike, and then I pulled out my phone. I texted, Do you ever think about the mirror in the hotel room?
I knew it was dumb, but we'd never talked about it. I didn't know if it was just a weird kink I hadn't known I possessed, or if it was actually the white-hot moment that it felt like we'd shared.
I went inside, and when he hadn't responded an hour later, after I'd changed into pajamas, washed my face, and brushed my teeth, I assumed he wasn't going to. He'd probably decided, in his infinite mature wisdom, that texting about our former sexual liaison was a bad idea, and a slippery slope that could only lead to sexting. Very smart. Good idea. Practical, practical Max. But the minute I turned off my lamp and slid under the covers, the phone buzzed. Max.
If you're going to ask me that, Sophie Gracie Steinbeck, you better be ready for my answer.
My breathing was immediately shallow, my pulse quickening as I read and reread the message in the darkness of my bedroom. I texted, I'm ready.
Max. I think about it all the time. I've literally dreamed about it. Watching you, watching me was the hottest thing I've ever seen in my fucking life.
I swallowed and replied, Agreed. Max.
While we're at this, you know, stupidly exchanging sex talk like this is a good idea, it's not. I think you should know that there's something about the way you bite and claw that drives me out of my mind.
I texted, I do not do that.
Max. No, you fucking grab and lead and are so damn intense that I can barely control myself. I cannot tell you how much I love it.
Me.
I mean, I'm glad you liked it, but I still don't think I did that.
Max.
Shall I send you a pic of my back?
I made a squealing noise and covered my mouth, half giggling and half dying of embarrassment. I typed, No.
Max. Just know that I will.
I put my hand on my stomach. This probably is a bad idea.
Max. Oh, I know that it is.
Me.
So we should stop.
Max.
Let's.
Me. After I tell you that the thing you did in the shower, with your hands, while I was...
Max. I knew you loved that, winky face.
Me. Yeah. I didn't make it tough to figure out.
Max, I can still hear your voice.
Me.
We should stop.
Max.
Yeah, I have to go. I flopped onto my back and stared at the ceiling, held my phone up in front of my face and texted, "Big plans? Max." No comment. I giggled again in the darkness of my bedroom, like some middle schooler. I couldn't stop myself from asking. "Cold shower? Winky face? Max."
"I said no comment, and I have to go. Good night, Miss Steinbeck."
"Me. Good night to you, Mr. Parks."
Chapter 40 Max.
"Guess what?"
I stirred the peppers in the skillet and said into the phone, "Who is this?"
"Shut up, smartass, and guess what I got for us?"
I turned my head so my neck cracked as I shook some fajita seasoning onto the veggies. I'd been in client meetings all day, my least favorite part of my job, and it was already 6 p.m., so I was starving and exhausted, especially since her sexting had done quite a number on my brain. I damn near wrecked the rent-a-bike when she texted me about the mirror because, fuck, I thought about it obsessively. It haunted me. The sight of naked Sophie, lost in passion and so gorgeous it hurt, meeting my gaze and not looking away as I came apart inside her body. Yeah, I couldn't get the vision out of my head. I asked, "What did you get for us?" I gave the peppers another stir before dumping them into my rice bowl. As I carried my dinner to the breakfast bar, she said, "I got us a wedding."
"What does that mean?"
I asked, sitting down on a stool and grabbing the kitchen remote, wondering what games were on.
"A gig," she said proudly. "I actually scored us an objector gig."
"Well, look at you," I teased, scrolling to ESPN. "Such a big girl."
"Right?
So, tell me all about it."
I turned on the Cubs game, but muted the sound, way more interested in listening to Sophie than I was the announcers. It felt like my interest in her was getting out of hand, but I had no plans to dial it back. I just liked her too much. I asked, "How the hell did this happen, by the way?"
"Through Larry, of all people."
She started talking about how Larry's sister's nephew was getting married next weekend, but he'd confided that he knew his fiance was cheating but couldn't call it off. And since Soph had told Larry about our side hustle, the old grump took it upon himself to make all the arrangements.
"Very impressive, Steinbeck," I said,
shoveling the food into my mouth, glad to have a reason to hang with her on Saturday. "It used to just be a job, a side hustle that helped people. But now, I actually looked forward to crashing weddings when she was with me."
"You've got all the details we'll need?"
"I do,"
she confirmed, sounding proud of herself.
"The cheating fiance, Lilibeth, is having an affair, but Garrett, the groom, can't call it off because her father is the chief financier of his business."
I hadn't heard anything but the bride's name. Lilibeth. Lilibeth. Time slowed to a stop as the name echoed in my skull.
"So I want to help not only because this is Larry's family," Sophie said, "but because the groom is in the same situation I was in. Powerful daddy-in-law in a position to ruin a career? I feel like I'm meant to help him or something."
It couldn't be her. It just couldn't. Because what were the odds? Yet I knew that it was. It had to be. I just knew it.
"Have you ever noticed that rich fathers are always the problem?" she asked, talking a mile a minute, completely unaware of the turmoil she'd just dropped on top of my world. "Wealthy men ruin the world, I swear to God."
Still, I had to be sure, and my voice cracked when I said,
"I'm sorry, what did you say the bride's name was again?"
"Lilibeth. What a name, right?" Her voice was full of snark when she said, "There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just such a rich girl's name. Lilibeth Palmer, daughter of a bank president, destroyer of a groom's heart." Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Holy shit, fucking fuck.
"And you said that she's..."
I cleared my throat.
"Having an affair?"
I pushed the food away from me as I tried to wrap my head around what was happening.
"And her fiance wants out?"
Bingo. She made a noise. I think she was talking to her cat before she said, "It's in Lincoln, so only an hour away. We're in, right?" I couldn't hear over the roaring in my ears. Lilibeth. Fucking Lily. "Actually, maybe we should pass on this one."
"What?"
She gasped, sounding utterly horrified.
"Why would we do that, Max? Is this because I got us the job? Is the big man the only one who can get jobs? Why wouldn't we want to take this one?"
"Christ, Soph," I said, trying to work through this fucking nightmare. "I just think that exposing a woman's infidelity in public is a bad idea. She'll get judged a lot more harshly than a man would."
"I guess that would make sense, except we did Callie's wedding, remember?"
I breathed in through my nose and closed my eyes. "That was different."
"Different how?"
she asked, wildly insistent all of a sudden.
"Callie was a monster," I replied, having a hard time even carrying on this conversation.
"True," she said.
"But how do you know Lilibeth isn't a monster?"
I said, rubbing the back of my neck, clueless how to convince her. "I just don't want to do this one."
"Seriously?"
she asked again, sounding as if she couldn't believe what I was saying.
"Yes,"
I said through clenched teeth, wanting to not think about whatever the fuck Lil was going through at the moment. "Let's pass."
"Are you kidding?"
"No, Soph," I said, trying really hard not to snap at her, but failing. "For the love of God, I want to turn it down."
"Oh."
Her voice was tense as she said in a clipped tone, "Wow. Fine. We will pass then, Mr. Parks. Goodbye."
"Soph," I started.
But she was done. The call was over.
"Fuck,"
I said to no one, standing and dumping my dinner into the trash can before literally throwing the plate into the sink like it was burning my hand.
"Fucking fuck."
I couldn't even think, for God's sake, as my heart pounded in my chest. This was fucking madness. I wasn't hungry anymore, and I needed to do something, anything, so I shoved my feet into my runners, loaded up my playlist, and cranked the motherfucking music as loud as I could stand it. But as I started running down 10th Street, the evening air still hot and humid, I realized that even exercise wasn't helping. At all. Because Lil was engaged. I wouldn't have imagined that it'd feel this, hell, this crushing. I hadn't been lying when I told Sophie that I almost never thought about her anymore. It was true, I didn't. Yet here I was, nearly hyperventilating at the thought of Lily getting married. What the hell is wrong with me? And not only was she getting married, but her fiancé was trying to get out of it. How did that even make sense? I mean, it didn't to me, but that was probably because I'd wanted to spend forever with her so fucking badly that I would have done anything to make it happen. Hell, I'd tried everything. But in the end, she'd looked at me through tears and told me that she just didn't love me anymore. She hadn't cheated, and I hadn't done anything wrong, but she didn't feel about me the way she was supposed to feel about her fiancé. She just couldn't imagine spending her entire life with me. I hadn't seen or talked to her in over 2 years, yet I didn't believe for a second that she was having an affair. It wasn't something she would ever do. She just wouldn't, regardless of whatever was going on in her life. But that didn't change the fact that the guy she planned to marry was trying to publicly destroy her and wanted my help in doing it. I might not be in love with her anymore, but there was no fucking way I was going to play a part in destroying her wedding. I just couldn't. The biggest question, I thought, as I turned onto 9th Street and cranked my music even louder, was whether or not I was going to reach out to her and warn her. I didn't want to get involved and knew it was a terrible idea, but I also couldn't stand by and let her get blindsided, could I? I knew I'd pissed Sophie off, and I also knew she wouldn't understand if I warned Lily without talking to her first. So I needed to apologize to Soph, mostly because the thought of her being upset because of me made my heart hurt, and then hopefully I'd be able to convince her about the warning. If not, I wasn't sure what I was going to do.
Chapter 41 Sophie What'd he say?
I set the phone on the coffee table in shock as I said to Larry, he thinks we should pass, and he yelled at me.
For real?
Larry's eyes narrowed, and he said, fucking Julian. I already said yes, goddammit. What the hell are we supposed to do now? I didn't care about the wedding. I just wondered what was going on with Max to make him snap at me like that, asshole. I stared into space, petting the girls and murmured, I have no idea.
Did he say why, that piece of shit?
I told Larry what Max said, and he surprised me by sort of agreeing with Max.
That makes a little sense because of the double standard about women cheating, but then why the fuck did you do the redneck wedding?
I think because he knew TJ, I said, pissed at Max regardless of the fact that he might be sort of right about part of it. Either way, I guess we're passing on this wedding.
The hell we are,
he said, grabbing my phone. Side note, Larry treated my phone like it was the landline and it cracked me up. If I left it sitting anywhere, he would just pick it up and use it. I didn't even use a passcode anymore because I got sick of him accidentally locking my phone all the time by trying to guess the code.
Let me make a call. I have an idea.
He took the phone into the other room while I sat on the couch, fuming. Max hadn't actually yelled at me. That had been an exaggeration, but he had snapped. And we never talked to each other like that. It was a trivial thing, but my feelings were hurt. Why in God's name would he be so short with me? 24 hours ago, we were texting each other about sex, and now he was treating me like I was his annoying little sister. I couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to this, that there was something with us, or the fact that I'd brought this wedding to the table that upset him. I didn't know why, but I just knew it wasn't simply about protecting some random stranger from being slut-shamed. Of course, it also irked me that I was glad for his insight, because I totally agreed that we didn't want to ruin some woman's life. He was right that we shouldn't air her dirty laundry to the world. But why had it been okay with him for Callie's wedding? What was the difference? And we could still lead the groom to the evidence, like we had with the other couple, couldn't we?
Who is Larry talking to?
Rose asked, sitting down on the couch beside me.
Are we getting takeout?
I've got a frozen pizza in the oven and he's talking to his sister, I said.
About the wedding.
I glanced over at her. What do you know?
I know all about you and Julian's little side hustle, if that's what you're asking.
He told you? I'd specifically told Larry not to tell Rose because it seemed like something she wouldn't approve of.
He did. He's not a coward like some pussies I know.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you. I started, but she cut me off with a hand raise.
I don't care, she said, rolling her eyes. I'm not some silly-hearted romantic who swoons over weddings, for God's sake. But you should consider adding a third.
A third?
Think about how helpful it'd be to have an old lady objecting. No one would punch me or anything like that.
In spite of everything, I smiled. You know, you're not wrong.
No shit. I got it!
Larry came sliding into the living room, literally in his stocking feet, and said around a grin,
We figured it out! That you and I should just do it?
Rose asked, judgment in her tone as if she and Larry had discussed this. He ignored her and said to me,
She says it would work even better for you and Max to object with a cryptic "we know reasons" statement and ask to see the bride and groom in private for a moment.
I knew that could work, I said, but my excitement immediately died because I didn't want to call Max or discuss it with him. He'd acted like a bossy dickhead. And there was no way I was going to let him decide if we were going to do it or not, like he was the damn parent in this scenario. Tell her that I'll do it, I said without another thought. Alone.
Chapter 42 Max. Good morning. Sophie's eyes left her phone, which she'd been staring at when she'd walked into Starbucks. And her eyebrows went down when she saw me. Hey, can you spare 5 minutes? I asked, grabbing the 2 cups of coffee the barista had just set on the end of the pickup counter. For the ass bag who snapped at me last night for no good reason? Sophie said, glancing at the cups. Is one of those an Americano?
With a splash of cream, I replied,
holding out the cup to her.
Fine then, she said, taking the cup, but I'm setting a timer.
Fair, I said, and followed her as she walked to a table in the back. It was quiet, in the way Starbucks was at 6:30 in the morning, with the white noise of steaming and blending, but not a lot of conversation. She was wearing slim black pants, high heels, and a starched dress shirt with no fewer than 6 strands of pearls wrapped around her neck. Something about the juxtaposition of that and her cute hair made her look like she belonged in a Ralph Lauren collection called The Businesswoman. She sat down, raised an eyebrow, and said into her watch, "Hey Siri, set a timer for 5 minutes." "I'm sorry," I said, because I was. I'd felt like shit all night, but every time I started to text her, I couldn't figure out any way to justify how I'd treated her without opening all of my baggage and dumping it all over the fucking floor. I was a total asshole.
You were, she said, taking the stopper out of her lid. But why?
I knew I was going to have to tell her, but it was hard. Things with Sophie were akin to pure sunshine all the damn time, and I didn't want to drag melancholy into our space. I said, what are the odds that you'll let me say it was about something unrelated to you and I just snapped without going into detail? She shrugged. You can say whatever you want. I'm just your friend. You don't have to tell me everything. That was not what I'd expected her to say. Seriously? She rolled her eyes. As long as it's the truth and the blow-up wasn't actually about us, you can keep your I'm a grumpy jerk secret and we'll move on. I feel like this is a trick, I said, even as relief settled over me. I wasn't sure when it had happened, but Sophie's opinion of me mattered a lot. No, I'm totally serious, she said, and I could tell by the way her face had relaxed that she meant it. But are you okay? Is there anything I can do about whatever made you upset? God, I loved her. I rubbed a hand over my chin, still in shock that she was just going to let it go. I'm good now. No worries. Good, she said, her eyes running all over my face as if looking for an answer. Is Larry pissed? I asked, lifting my cup. About his sister's nephew? No. I mean, he cursed Julian to hell and back at first, she said, smiling. But then we found a way where I can still do it, but not air the bride's dirty laundry. Just like that, the roaring was back in my ears. I tried being nonchalant, but didn't even sound close to it when I said, wait, what? What do you mean you are going to do it? She raised her eyebrows, challenging me, and said, Larry talked to his sister, and all parties agreed that I can do a whole I object and have proof, can we speak in private thing, like we did in Detroit. I set down my cup and swallowed, unable to come up with a response. I totally respect that it's not something you're comfortable with, so I'm just going to do it solo. It's probably time for me to strike out like a big girl anyway, right? She was grinning, a genuine smile with no malice behind it. I knew she wasn't saying it to get a rise out of me, but I just kept picturing Lily, and it made my gut clench. You can't do it, Soph, I said, rubbing both hands over my jaw in frustration. Please pass on this one. What is your problem with this, Max? She asked, her voice no longer calm. Why are you— She's my ex, I ground out, feeling like my teeth were going to shatter because every muscle in my jaw was clenched so hard. The bride is my ex, okay? Her mouth fell open, and she sat back in her chair, her eyes wide. Lilibeth is the ex? The ex that broke? Yes. I was trying my hardest not to sound like I was snapping, but for fuck's sake, I didn't want to go any further than that tiny detail. So can you just pass on this one? She looked shell-shocked. Do you still have feelings for her? No, I said, a little too quickly, making it sound shallow and like a knee-jerk lie. So why can't I do this solo then? She tilted her head and stared at me, quietly watching the play of emotion on my face as if she could read it. You're not affiliated with it. I'm not publicly shaming her, and it's still the same principle that we always follow. So what's the problem? She's having an affair, and her fiancé is trapped, so I will save him. Why would that bother you? I know she wouldn't cheat, I said, fully aware of how weak my argument was. And it just doesn't feel right to me. Isn't that enough? Not really, she said, resting her chin on her hand. Why wouldn't you want to take this piece of total cosmic karma that's being given to you? Because karma doesn't work in this situation. That made her blink fast, and I could see the wheels turning. Oh my God, were you the cheater? Some part of me thought it was nice that she seemed to find that an impossible concept. No one cheated, I clarified, and I could tell she was waiting for more. I looked at my phone, unwilling to say anything else. I have to get going. So, she said, looking irritated now as I stood. That's it? We're done talking about this? Soph, I said, making sure to say it as nicely as I could. I told you how I feel, and now you can proceed however you choose. Also, more importantly, what time is your interview? Yes, I was changing the subject, but I was changing it to something that actually was more important. She looked like she wanted to discuss this more, but she pushed back her chair and stood. 2 o'clock. Are you ready? Of course she's ready, I thought, because I'd never met anyone who took their job more seriously than Sophie. Yes, she said, picking up her keys. I just wish it was first thing. The waiting's going to kill you, isn't it? I asked as we headed for the doors. For sure. She glanced over at me. And even though our words were normal, there was something different in her face, like a question mark as our eyes met. She said, I might have a relapse and bludgeon Stuart to death if he looks at me wrong. He'll be your human stress ball. Something like that. We talked about the weather as we headed to our cars. Gorgeous morning, though a little humid already. And I told her to call me after the interview. But things felt off. Like things just weren't right yet with us. Because of course they weren't. Lily was suddenly between us, even though we weren't an us. I will, she said, climbing into her hot rod. You'll know it's me because I'll either be woo-hooing my ass off or sobbing like a toddler. Crossing my fingers for woo-hoo Sophie then, I replied, watching as she took off her glasses and reached for her prescription Ray-Bans. I probably should have bought booze in advance for either scenario, she said, her voice wry with sarcasm. I'll get it the minute you call, Steinbeck. She smiled, but it didn't reach her eyes. I'd screwed things up with us.
Chapter 43 Sophie.
Tell me.
I smiled and stepped into the lobby of the building so I could talk privately without everyone on the floor overhearing. I'd just finished my interview and immediately called Max. It was amazing. I was prepared for every single question they asked, and at the end they said it was just a formality, but they're going to schedule a meeting for me and the leadership team.
Congratulations!
Max boomed through the phone, a smile in his voice. I'm not surprised, but this is amazing news. When's the meeting?
In a week, I said, still unable to believe it was actually happening.
Holy shit, Max, do you realize that if we hadn't started our whole fake friendship thing, this might not be happening?
Wild, right? He said, and I could hear his grin. I wanted to see him.
At that minute, I just wanted to be with the one person in the world who actually understood how badly I wanted this, and who seemed proud of me about it.
So I felt warm inside when he said, You know we have to get drinks tonight, Sophie Steinbeck.
Yes, we do, I agreed, melting into my own grin.
I feel like the lovely servers at Upstream will be pissed if they see us coming on another weeknight, though.
Oh.
So let's hit Jackson Street Tavern. I'll bring the cigars.
I'd love that, I said, excited, but don't feel obligated.
I wouldn't miss this for the world, you fucking vice presidential goddess.
Max, I very nearly squealed, excited and just plain happy. But then I remembered where I was and managed to cool. Thank you.
Ditch the heels beforehand this time, he said, because no way will we get lucky twice with the bike.
I was beaming. Thank God no one was around to see me when I said, absolutely I will.
You know, he said, they're closing my street for Beer Fest on Saturday. We should totally go.
Shit. I'd love to, but I can't, I said, bracing myself for the fact that we might have to have the conversation I'd been avoiding because I was pretty sure it was going to make him upset.
Damn it, Steinbeck, how dare you schedule something in your life without my approval? The nerve!
He joked, sounding adorably teasing.
What are you doing? Iron Man with old Lair Bear?
No, I said, taking a deep breath before casually saying, we're doing the wedding in Lincoln. He's going with me. But what time does Beer Fest end? I'll probably be back by 7 o'clock. He didn't say anything. The line went silent. Fine. I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to wait for him to speak. Because I'd done nothing wrong. I was simply working a wedding. The same thing he'd done multiple times. But the silence just hung there and went on and on. Max, I finally said, trying to keep things light. We can still drink a lot of beer if it goes until 8. I've been known to shotgun.
Why?
His voice was clipped and serious. My nerves were jittery as I spurted out a breathy, what?
Why are you so hell-bent on doing this, Sophie?
It wasn't angry or irritated the way he said it. It was more exhausted or resigned. Like he was too tired to deal with it, which irritated me, because he wasn't wrong at all. I was hell-bent on doing it. As soon as he'd said his ex was the cheating bride, I'd been out of my mind excited about doing it. I wanted to rescue her groom, yes, but I wanted to score a point for my friend whose heart she'd destroyed. I wanted her to feel as bad as she'd made him feel. Also, I wanted to see what Lilibeth, what a ridiculous name for someone who wasn't a royal, looked like. She didn't appear to have any public profiles on any platform that I could access, which was absurd. What kind of psychopath wasn't on social media? It bothered me a lot that he didn't want me to do it, that he seemed to want to protect her from being hurt. Did he still love her? Was he still in love with her? I tried to come up with an answer to give him, but instead I blurted out, "Why are you so hell-bent on me not doing this?" He sighed. Long and deep, like it was coming from his very center, and he said,
whatever, Sophie.
Whatever? I asked. You're going to whatever me over this?
I have to go,
he said, sounding so cold that it hurt my heart. Why? I asked, a heaviness settling into my chest.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Wait, no drinks tonight? I asked, absolutely horrified by the overwhelming disappointment in my voice. Him backing out on celebrating with me because I was wronging his ex felt like a betrayal. Please, 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 don't skip out on me, I thought, desperately hoping he'd just momentarily forgotten.
I can't, he said, his voice raspy and emotionless. I'm sorry.
A burning started in the center of my chest, and I blinked fast as tears threatened to form. Seriously, Max?
I can't, Soph. I have to go.
He ended the call before I could say another word.
Chapter 44 Max. I sat there, bellied up to the bar, feeling like I was getting an ulcer, as the wounded sound of Sophie's voice kept playing in my head over and over again. I wanted to scrap this plan and go talk to her about every pathetic thing. But now that I was here, I might as well finish what I'd started. The second I was done, though, I promised myself that I'd grab champagne and ice cream and run to Soph's. Just as I thought that, I saw long red hair and big green eyes out of the corner of my eye. Lily was here. The familiar pang of something slammed into me as our eyes met and she smiled.
I'd thought about that smile so many fucking times over the years that it was ridiculous, honestly. And seeing it felt like returning to something comfortable. Like visiting a house you used to live in. Hey, you, she said, giving me a friendly hug before taking the stool beside me. Lil, I said, motioning to the bartender to get her a drink. What do you want, Pinot? Her smile grew a little bigger. Of course. I didn't know how to broach the delicate subject, but I supposed it wasn't my job to protect her anymore. I wanted to just say my piece, for my conscience's sake, and get the hell out of there. So, the reason I wanted to talk to you. Yes, she said. And I realized she looked different. Better. She'd always been beautiful, but there was something more relaxed in her smile, more alive in her eyes. Maybe that was because it had been a while, but she looked happy. Shit, I'd probably never seen her look happy because she'd been with me. I don't know how to say this, so I'm just going to spill it. Oh, God, she said, pushing her long hair behind her ear and crossing her arms. This can't be good. It's not. I started talking, giving her a light version of what was happening. I told her that my best friend's roommate's sister knew her fiancé, and there were rumors that he thought she was having an affair, and he was considering calling off the wedding. It's very possible that he'll do nothing, and the wedding will go off as planned, I said, unable to tell what she was thinking. But I thought you deserved to know so you didn't marry someone who wasn't absolutely certain about you. I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't for her to close her eyes and say, thank God. I'm sorry. I watched as nothing but relief showed on her face. What? She exhaled. I'm not having a physical affair, Max, but I've had feelings for someone else for a long time, and it's recently come to my attention that he feels the same way. Oh, I said. And as she sipped her wine, it occurred to me that I didn't feel the way I'd always felt around her. She was gorgeous and smelled good and I liked her, but I didn't feel suffocated by how badly I wanted her in my life. It had simmered into more of an affection, of a warmth for someone who used to be important to me. Hell, I wanted to get out my phone and text Soph that very second that I'd had a breakthrough. But would she take my call? To be honest, I've been brazen about texting this other person in an attempt to get Garrett to call it off. That seems kind of shitty, I said, picking up my pint glass. I know, she agreed, but my parents adore him, and I've been too scared to do it myself. It doesn't matter. Out of nowhere, that thought came to mind. Her life and what was happening in it didn't matter to me. At all. Get married, don't get married, it didn't matter. When in the hell had this happened? I wanted the best for her, but her relationships no longer mattered to me. So what are you going to do? I asked, feeling relieved that my responsibility was over and also that, holy shit, I was apparently finally over her. She sighed, but didn't sound too worried. What I should have done all along. I'm going to go over to G's and talk to him. Good, I said. So fucking glad this was no longer on my plate. Can I ask you a question? Sure, I answered, just wanting to get out of there now that I was done. What is it? Why did you text me and then meet up with me when you could have just said, not my problem, and moved on? I mean, we haven't talked in years. I have no idea, I thought. But before I could say the words, I realized that, yes, I did know. Because I'll always care about you, Lil, regardless of whether we're in each other's lives. The second I left the bar, I dropped my truck home and quickly changed. Then I stopped at Cenex for champagne and Ted and Wally's for ice cream, and I picked up a bouquet of assorted summer flowers from the corner vendor. Time to celebrate.
I nearly sprinted to her building, and when I got to the lobby, I buzzed her apartment.
What?
Rose responded, her voice booming through the airy foyer. Of course I'd get Rose. It's Max, here to see Sophie.
She doesn't want to see you, Julian,
the woman yelled, sounding like her entire mouth was on the speaker.
Go away.
Will you please tell her I have ice cream? I said, wondering if Soph had actually said that she didn't want to see me. I knew she was irritated with me for backing out, but I also knew she'd forgive me when I told her where I'd been and about my breakthrough.
She doesn't care,
Rose said, but she buzzed me in. I pulled open the door, confused, but then I heard her squawk,
Damn it,